The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nothing perfect or considered, but we're so damn good. It's the story of your life. You're moving down the page, and you know you're on your way. The story of your life. You live it every day. You run, but you won't get away.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada, it's Hugh Hewitt, Monday, January the 25th. The rundown is the Super Bowl is going to be terrific. It's going to be Tom Brady versus Mahomes. It's the number one and number three teams in the league. Of course, if we'd had an officiating crew at the Browns-Chiefs game, it would be the Buccaneers and the Browns, but I digress. I want to begin today because one of the great things about having a radio show is that you get to rise in defense of your friends when they are slandered. And my friend Senator Tom Cotton was slandered on Friday by the left-wing website Salon. Now, you may never have heard of Salon because it is not widely read and its bylines are not known to people. But nevertheless, it put out a hit piece, a smear, suggesting that Tom Cotton claimed he had served in the Ranger Regiment. Senator Cotton is a Ranger School graduate and served in combat with the 101st Airborne. He has never claimed to have been in the Ranger Regiment. Now, I have interviewed Senator Cotton almost weekly from 2012 and maybe from 2011 on. So you do the math. That's about 300 to 400 times that Senator Cotton, when he has been on this show, he was on this show as Congressman Cotton, and he was on this show as Candidate Cotton. He's a good friend. I like to joke, I knew him when he was just a tall guy at the 2012 convention in Tampa Bay that nobody knew. And he's a good friend, and he's a great American. And a graduate of Harvard College, he was in Harvard Law School when 9/11 happened, and he made arrangements to join the Army and to seek combat leadership at the platoon level. He did not want to be a JAG. And the many times he's told his story, when I have pressed him for the benefit of new audience, new affiliates being added to the Hugh Hewitt Show every week, he has always said the same thing. I left Harvard Law, finished my commitment to clerking, joined the Army on the condition that I would be trained as a combat officer. I am a Ranger, having graduated from Ranger School, or sometimes he'll just say, I am a Ranger, and I deployed to Iraq with the 101st, and then did a tour back in the United States with the Old Guard, and also did a tour in Afghanistan. I can't remember the unit. He has never claimed to be in the Ranger Regiment. Now, the quote reporter at Salon is clearly not very familiar with military terms. Now, this is a dangerous area for civilians. I'm very careful when I talk about this because I know what I don't know. But I know that while every member of the Ranger Regiment, the 75th Ranger Regiment, every member of the Ranger Regiment is a Ranger, I also know that not every Ranger has served with the Ranger Regiment. Ranger goes with the tab. and the tab goes to people who graduate from the legendary Ranger School. So I would guess, I asked an Army officer this weekend, what percentage of 101st Airborne, given its elite status within the Army, what percentage of its officers are Rangers, do you think? And the answer came back, I would guess 80%. I don't know that. That's a guess. But the fact is, you are a Ranger when you graduate from Ranger School. General Scott Miller, who previously served in the Ranger Regiment, four-star commander in Afghanistan, also a member of Delta Force, he commanded the Joint Special Operations Command, quote, "You'll leave Victory Pond today with a small piece of cloth on your shoulder. But more importantly, you carry the title Ranger from here on out." When this controversy arose, and it's not really a controversy, it's a hit piece, but it really did tick off a lot of people. Sergeant Major Rick Merritt said, "It's unfair. It's almost slanderous. Cotton's 100% a Ranger. He will always be a Ranger." Rick Merritt was the regimental sergeant major for the Ranger Regiment, served in numerous positions throughout his career. General Tony Thomas on Twitter, this was my favorite response, to a Democratic congressman who is also a Ranger, but who served in the 75th Regiment and therefore wore the Ranger beret, had dogged Cotton, saying, "If you haven't read the beret, you're not a Ranger. If you have not worn the beret, you are not a Ranger." And that, of course, insults every Ranger out there who did not serve in the 75th Ranger Regiment. And General Tony Thomas blasted this Democratic congressman, saying, "This is a dumb debate." And he said parenthetically, "I feel pretty qualified to say that. Need you to focus on more important things for the good of the nation. You and Cotton get together and work like Ranger buddies." Again, former JSOC commander, Southern Command commander, held multiple positions in the Ranger Regiment. Now, Salon, despite leading the smear against Senator Cotton, has themselves described female Ranger School graduates as the first female U.S. Army Rangers, which they are. But it is inconsistent internally with the website's editorial standards, including one of Salon's journalists, Bio, described himself as a Ranger, correctly, because he graduated from Ranger School just like Tom Cotton. Yahoo News describes soldiers graduating Ranger Schools as Rangers, as does NBC, NPR, Business Insider, Time, Fox News, Fortune, CNN, The Guardian, Wall Street Journal. I've always understood, and whenever Senator Cotton's been on the show, he said, "Well, I went to Harvard Law. I'm a Ranger. I went to Iraq with the 101st, was a platoon leader, served in the old guard." He wrote the book Sacred Duty, which is a very fine book. He has never claimed to be in the Ranger Regiment. And that would be wrong if he had. That would be adding to your record. He's been accused by left-wing nutters on the web of the very insidious practice of stolen valor. And there are some members of Congress, I will not mention them, who have engaged in stolen valor, but not Tom Cotton. Straight shooter Tom Cotton. The bio he has used. Tom served nearly 5 years on active duty in the United States Army as an infantry officer. Tom served in Iraq with the 101st Airborne and in Afghanistan with the Provincial Reconstruction Team. Between his two combat tours, Tom served with the Old Guard at Arlington National Cemetery. Tom's military decorations include the Bronze Star, Combat Infantry Badge, and Ranger Tap. On this show, he said, "I'm a Ranger. I served in Iraq with the 101st Airborne. I served in Afghanistan." In his book, Sacred Duty, Tom Cotton says, "I'm a United States Senator from Arkansas. He served in Iraq with the 101st Airborne Division and in Afghanistan with the Provincial Reconstruction Team. Between combat tours, he served with the United States Army's 3rd Infantry Regiment, that's the Old Guard, which we've talked about at length on this show. His military decorations include the Bronze Star and Combat Infantry Badge and the Ranger Tab. He served one term in the House, before election to Senate. He's a graduate of Harvard College and Harvard Law School. He's married to Anna. He has two sons, Gabriel and Daniel. Bottom line, the left wing, through a quote reporter, fabricated a new standard that you have to be in the Ranger 75th Regiment to call yourself a Ranger, and then accused Cotton of fabricating his Ranger status when Cotton had never claimed to serve in the Ranger Regiment. Made it clear he fought with the 101st Airborne, emphasis on fought, platoon leadership in the surge in Baghdad. It is a slander, and I think it's because the, quote, reporter is stupid and does not understand that you are a Ranger when you come out of Ranger school. And if you have any other questions about it, go look up the Ranger Hall of Fame and see that eligibility is for Rangers, who is run by the U.S. Army Ranger Association. And it says, look, you've got to have either served in the 75th, another Ranger unit, or graduate from U.S. Army Ranger School. Because that is the truth. Salon, publisher retraction, you hacks. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I must tell you, it is raining in Southern California where I spend January and February till I get vaccinated. I lived out here for so long. Most of my doctors are here, so we're back here waiting for vaccinations, fetching Mrs. Hugh and I, and it's raining. That's great. Something that you get used to on the East Coast when I'm in the Beltway, but it's just raining. Time for the market report sponsored by Birch Gold. Remember, if you want to buy gold, go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. As I tell you every single day, I am an inflation bull, meaning I believe it is coming because you have never seen, no one has ever seen the printing, proverbial printing of this much money globally at the same time. Because of the virus, in the United States, it will approach, it's already at $4 trillion, and President Biden wants it to be $6 trillion. There's more on that story after the break with Jake Sherman. That's not going anywhere. But it'll probably be $5 trillion. Gold is at $1,855 an ounce. It is the inflation buster. If inflation comes, and it will come, in my opinion, I am not a prophet nor the son of a prophet, but I believe it will come, you will wish you had gold, or you will wish portion of your retirement, 10 to 25%, was in physical gold managed by Birch Gold. They will send you the free information kit. You don't have any obligation. Learn how they do it. They take the amount of gold that you buy with a rolled over 401k or an IRA, and they put it in a physical depository, and there it sits until you take it out. And it's the safest thing to do other than owning gold yourself and putting it in a safety deposit box. Only you get the appreciation tax-free if you put it in any appreciation that occurs. Gold can go down. It has once in a while. I think it got down to 1,400 during the last couple of years. It's been over 2,000. But it's a hedge against hyperinflation. Now, this week is going to be a great week for me because I own Amazon. It's the only stock I own. I own mutual funds and diversification. I own gold. But I follow one stock at a time because I'm not smart enough to follow all the stocks. You know, I'm a broadcast journalist and a lawyer, and I run the Nixon Foundation, and I show up on Meet the Press occasionally, and I write for the Washington Post. I got a lot of stuff going on, even though I'm lazy, and even though I can't go to movies. So I just follow one stock. I follow Amazon. And over at MarketWatch, tech's last hurrah, if hedge funds are any indication, it could be a big week for Apple, Amazon, and other mega cap favorites. Gene Goldman is the chief investment officer at Cetera Financial, saying there's been a surge in hedge funds buying options on high-profile stocks like Apple and Amazon. They increased their net exposure to mega caps in the tech sector at one of the fastest paces in recent years. Why are they doing that? Because the tech sector is the one that has benefited most from the disintermediation of old patterns by COVID. Now, Jeff Bezos, the reason I also buy Amazon is I think the guy's a genius, and he is indirectly my boss. He owns the Washington Post, but he doesn't have anything to do with the editorial page, the opinion section, which I write for. But I should disclose that as well. Bezos made a very smart decision. He knew he was going to be on top of a company that was going to make a lot of money during the virus. So he did not make profit. He took that money and he built infrastructure. He bought jets. He built distribution centers. He increased pay and health of his workers. He expanded in critical building space, leaseholding, new adventure, so that he's not profiting from the misery of the world. He's building revenue to help rebuild the world. And boy, it's going to come home. I mean, it's the smartest thing I've seen anyone do. Target made money, Costco made money, Walmart made money, Netflix made money, Facebook made money, Twitter made money. Twitter lost some money recently, but Amazon, gosh, Bezos is smart. Well, in any event, inflation is going to come. So I believe in being fully invested, and I believe in owning some gold. Go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. When we come back, the Democrats own gold in the Senate, two of them. Impeachment and the rules. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. 33 minutes after the hour. I am joined by Jake Sherman of PunchbowlNews.com. Jake, good morning. How are you? Oh, no Jake. There are two lines lit up, but no Jake yet. Oh, there's a little glitch in our proceeding here. Well, what I want to ask him about is the own goal that the Democrats have scored on themselves twice. They really want to get a COVID relief bill through. And the Washington Post wrote up this morning, ain't going so well. What's that? Is Jake with us now? Good morning, Jake.
Hey, Hugh. How are you?
Good. I've got one procedural question, and then let's get to the substance of COVID relief. I read Punch Bowl News this morning, and I said that's exactly what we want to talk about. Procedural question. The articles come over today. The Senate immediately goes into impeachment trial format, right?
That's right, yep.
So well, if President Trump...
Right. It's not entirely right. So what will happen is they'll go into... They'll receive the articles tonight. I believe they'll be read tonight, although I can't exactly remember. The jurors will be sworn, the Senate will be sworn in tomorrow, and then they lay out the timeline for the president to submit his brief. So listen, it's not going to be in full swing until the second week of February, but for all intents and purposes, tonight is when the process starts.
So when they actually sit as the 100, and you have to be at your desk, that whole stuff that we went through a year ago, kangaroo court, in my opinion, not yours, they have to sit down at their desk. At that moment, if President Trump sues to enjoin the proceeding, which I think he ought to do as unconstitutional, does it freeze the Senate during the pendency of the court proceedings in federal court as to whether or not the body is constitutionally in process?
You're the lawyer, Hugh, but I would imagine it does. But you want to know what's interesting? I was talking to somebody who was on this call the other day with the Senate Republicans, and they don't seem interested in going to court. And I don't know, because, like, usually we all have a good window into what the president's thinking because he has people around him who are willing and eager to talk to the press and explain how he's feeling. And I'm not talking about leak. Like, I just want to know basic questions like, does he want to go to court? You know, how does he plan on defending himself? Who's working the Hill for him? Things like that. We don't have that this time around just because, you know, he doesn't have people working for him in the same way that he used to. So I don't know what he's thinking, but I would imagine everybody that I talk to who's anti-impeachment. By the way, Mitt Romney, who you thought would be, think it was unconstitutional, he said yesterday it was constitutional. So there's just a big, I'm not saying that as a, you know, a rejoinder to you. I'm just saying that people are all over the place here.
No, I was surprised by Senator Romney because it is clearly unconstitutional and he's a good lawyer. But, you know, everyone's going to take their position. What I think, though, is interesting. Like an NFL coach, you don't show your game plan. So this lawyer that he's hired that Lindsey Graham thinks high of, I don't know. I wouldn't tell anyone what I was going to do. I would wait till they began. Then I would seek to enjoin the proceeding. And I believe it will freeze the proceeding and freeze the Senate under its rules. Because once begun, it's supposed to be stopped. It's supposed to go on until it's done.
Yes, but they could split their business. And they seem to have an agreement that they are going to split their business, an agreement between Schumer and McConnell, which we actually broke in Punchbowl PM on Friday night, an agreement that basically says they're going to have this time period between this Tuesday, so tomorrow, and February, whatever, 8th, I think it is, the Monday, February 8th. So there are a couple weeks, but listen, if he goes to court after, I mean, I would imagine that he could go to court anytime after tonight at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. when they get the articles over there.
Yeah, but that's not what, if I were king of the forest, not queen, not duke, not earl, I'd let them start and go into continuous proceeding, then I would sue to enjoin in order to freeze the Senate and gum up the works. Because I don't believe the Senate will proceed during the pendency of an issue on jurisdiction, because I don't think they have jurisdiction.
Would they go directly to the Supreme Court? Is that
no,
how it would work?
No. Start no. In the District Court of Florida, go to the 11th Circuit, which is 8-4 Trump appointees for an en banc hearing, or 8-4 Republican appointees for an en banc hearing, and then get it. It would take months. Months, maybe weeks, but I think months. And the Senate, I believe, would be frozen. So that's, so you know, if I'm calling the plays, that's how I'd run it, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did yesterday. By the way, were you upset they didn't go for it on fourth down, the Packers?
Yeah, I thought it was stupid, but I didn't really have a rooting interest besides Jim Vandehei, my friend, who's a big Packers fan. I'd like to see them lose just to see him upset, but
I pretty much approached the game that way. I wanted Tampa Bay to win so that Belichick would be proven to have been an appendage to Brady and not the other way around. But we also know the Browns were clearly the better team than the Bills, and they were jobbed by the refs against the Chiefs. So it should be a Browns-Bucks Super Bowl, but I digress. Let's go to Punch Bowl News this morning. Own goal by the Democrats. Your reporting is elaborating on something the Washington Post began this morning, but you have much more depth. They're not going to get anything through at this pace, especially with impeachment. Would you explain to people why not?
Well, I think, and I was just texting with a reporter friend of mine who made the point that the left is going to be crazy with Biden by March 1st because he's putting forth a $2 trillion COVID relief deal. Let's actually just put aside the substance for a second and not even have an opinion on that. Getting a $2 trillion bill through this tight Congress is going to be difficult. And people think, you know, well, we could do it on reconciliation. Reconciliation, the budget maneuver that only requires 51 votes in the Senate, it is time-consuming. It is hard. It's not easy. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, and we're already basically at the end of January. So I just think that, listen, you know, once a budget comes before the Senate, you know this well, Hugh, it's subject to what we call a voterama. Could be potentially thousands of amendments to the budget, which have to be considered on the floor. Not all of them, but many of them have to be considered on the floor. And then you have to go through what's called the Byrd process, which is a budget process that strikes out some of the provisions in your bill. So it's just not as easy as people think. If I were the Democrats, and I could have opinions like this now that I'm at my own news outlet and I don't answer to anybody, but this is not an opinion based on partisan politics. It's an opinion based on strategy. If I were the Democrats, and you want to get something done, you do basically what is you do vaccine money and maybe direct checks and get that out the door immediately. And you would be able to get that through the Senate. I am relatively certain about that.
Can I amend the Sherman proposal, with which I agree?
Sure.
I would also dismiss impeachment. So I had every day, all day. And I would add to your two things a small tax on Dreamers, $5, in order to make it a budget matter and get them status. Because then I think it survives the Byrd rule if you have a revenue generation or a revenue impact. That's how they use reconciliation to get rid of the Obamacare tax. And therefore, they could get immigration and vaccine money and relief money and have a big win in the 100 days. But where the road they're going down now with impeachment and reconciliation and $2 billion, you are absolutely right. They will not get it done.
I don't even think – I would even argue, so I would amend your proposal, say I don't actually – first of all, they're never going to get rid of impeachment. They're just not going to do it. It's just not – they're just not going to do it. But I actually think they could get something done even with impeachment if they pared back their proposal. I mean – and I'm not suggesting – again, I'm not suggesting that this isn't a good place to start. It probably is. If you're Biden, you start with 100 and you settle at 75% or 60% or 55%, wherever you end up, and you're happy with it and you're fine with it. I just think, you know, it gets difficult at $2 trillion. You're already hearing people who are willing to spend money. Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. I don't know if Lisa Murkowski does anything, but Todd.
Joe Manchin.
Cycle.
Yeah.
Joe, they're saying it's too much. It's too much money and it's not targeted enough. And I understand that. You start off at 100, but remember, when you start off at 100, does the left in the House let you out if you pare back? Does the left in the Senate, Bernie Sanders, the budget chairman? I mean, there's just a lot of it's a minefield, and it's really not easy.
And you need to focus like a laser. That's why the impeachment is so stupid. Now, Jake, I want to ask you about Ron Klain. I have a theory that the hardest job in Washington, well, there are two of them. One is the National Security Advisor and the other is Chief of Staff. And the chief of staff in the past has sometimes come in. I think of Mac McClarty, who had no government experience, and Reince Priebus, who had vast political experience but no executive office experience, as opposed to Jim Baker. Baker was very effective. McClarty and Reince, less so. Ron Klain is in the Jim Baker mode. So he very smartly went on Meet the Press yesterday and walked back the underlings. They left us nothing because, you know, if you go over to the CDC tracker, there are 41 million doses distributed and 22 million administered. He knew not to get involved in that. He cut that, you know, he just stopped the bleeding there. He's a very smart chief of staff. I think that's a huge advantage for Team
huge.
Biden.
He understands government, right? And that's important because he can't disdain the institution that you're purporting to lead or you need to lead, right? I mean, understands the levers of power. I mean, has been chief of staff to two vice presidents, has worked on the Hill, has run campaigns, has been a lobbyist, he's been in the private sector. He gets it. I would say, like, I think what they were trying to say is that there is no national strategy for dispersing the vaccine, which I think is the fairest criticism, right? I mean, Trump even said we're leaving it up to states, and I think that's a fine, you know, strategy. I think that's what Biden and the team was trying to say, but they didn't say that. They said there's no strategy, which is not really true. I mean, there is a strategy. It might not be the strategy that you would have employed, but Klain understands. Remember, Klain, obviously, as you know, ran the Ebola stuff. He's kind
very
of
smart on this stuff. And he does not need to make exaggerated claims. He needs to stop the virus. He's very concerned about it, too. He actually knows epidemiology and that stuff. So I thought that was a show of competence that is welcomed by both sides. And he's going to be the face of the administration when it's not the president. That's my theory.
Absolutely.
What do you think of that?
Yep. I think you're right. We're actually going to launch something, I think, at the end of this week, early next week. We're doing a little series on the first 100 days in Punch Bowl, and Klain is one of the first people we're showcasing. So we think he's going to be a critical, obviously very critical, and we think highly of his experience, and think he's in. Not only we don't really think highly, but everyone we talk to thinks highly. And
yeah, I mean
you know him.
I'm part of the Ron Klain fan club, even though our politics are opposite. Last question: the Merrick Garland team at Justice is very credentialed. But they have not announced the Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust. And I'm watching that very closely because if it's someone with big tech ties, it's a It's a terrible conflict of interest because all they have to do. Jake, I have a fun fact to know and tell that I learned this weekend from Shoshana Rodoff's book, The Rise of Surveillance Capitalism. Do you know that 5% of apps, or between 4 and 6% of apps on your phone, include the ability to turn on your voice recording without you knowing it?
Crazy. Yeah, I'm scared to death about all this stuff. So whenever I talk to you about it, it freaks me out. I will say this, Hugh, and I think you know this as well, and I think you'd agree with me. There is bipartisan concern about big tech stuff on the Hill, and there's only it's only a matter of time before this really rears its head in a big way, I think, personally.
Watch that AAG for antitrust, Jake. That's where the combat will be. Jake Sherman of PunchbowlNews.com. Thank you. Everyone should get Punchbowl News in the morning. Everyone. You need to come right back. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Time for the Yinzer Report with America's favorite Pittsburgher, Selena Zito. And I think that's a fair. Not many of us like Pittsburgh, Selena. Not those of us who are Browns fan, but we make an exception for you. We like you, so welcome. How are you?
I'm swell. How are you? Good morning.
Swell is one of those words, by the way, that they use in Pittsburgh a lot. Selena. I loved your New York Post column, which I'm about to tweet out, why the U.S. Hispanic conservative movement is surging even without Trump. It looks to me to be a book outline. Am I right about that?
Well, I don't know about that yet. I have to really think about that. But, you know, I paid attention to this growth, actually, beginning with Rick Scott in Florida. Now, you know, there's a lot of media and a lot of Democrats will dismiss Florida because they said, oh, Cuba and Cuban voters. But the fact is, Scott gained Hispanic voters from a bunch of different countries of origin. And it was just dismissed or not paid attention to. So during the election of 2020, was something that was really on my mind when I was out there interviewing people. And I think what's really fascinating, and this really got dismissed again or not paid attention to, because the president didn't win and because they lost Colorado and Arizona, no one really talked about the just monumental gain that Republicans received among Hispanic voters. In fact, former Senator Cory Gardner got more Hispanic votes than suburban white votes.
It's pretty remarkable. And I will tell you the backstory for me. My son, who was in the Trump administration at the EPA, left and went to work for a Florida congressman by the name of Michael Waltz. So I've started to follow Florida politics. He sends me stuff. And you're right. It's not Cubans and Puerto Ricans. It's actually every sort of Hispanic you can imagine, Mexican Americans and Venezuelan Americans and Guatemalan American. Florida is genuinely a melting pot.
It really is. And it's on real issues. It's on bread and butter issues that doesn't have anything to do with race. But has a lot to do with the immigrant experience, which many of us descended from, like I did. My grandparents came here from Italy, and these were things that were, you know, things like job creation, faith, religious freedom. You know, those things are incredibly important, but also things like, you know, the Democrats in their messaging championed or allowed things to be championed that were large oppressive government issues, like changing things that have been part of our fabric, like, I don't know, packing the courts or, you know, it's things like that where there was.
You know, I had lunch with two major Republican Party activists in California last week, who are optimistic about the California Republican Party's new appeal to Hispanics based upon an anti-lockdown mentality among Latinos who work and work and work and do not want to be stopped from working.
Yes, that's absolutely true. There's that aspirational sting that's hard to put into words, but is a part of just. It doesn't matter how long you have been in this country, whether your family's been here for generations or your family's been here for 2 weeks.
I loved your portrait of the ascender, Moises Sanchez. And you've got these categories. That's why I thought of the Great Revolt. You've got the assimilator, the ascender, the rebel, the doubter. I see a book here. And the ascender is the one I think that the Republicans have got to grab onto.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much potential. And what's really interesting is that it's come to the... These voters have come to the Republican Party organically. It's like the white working class and the former blue-collar Democrats who came to the party organically beginning in 2010 with those midterms.
But, Selena, you just confused your Pittsburgh people. They think that means that they eat vegetarian. When you say organically, you've just confused the heck out of them. By the way, is Big Ben going to retire like Aaron Rodgers from Green Bay?
I don't know. I don't know if he thinks he's going to want to have one more in him because of the way that the season ended this year.
You mean being beaten by the Browns?
Yeah.
That's my theory. That. He's not going to let his last game be a loss to the Browns. That's my theory. Selena, how often do you write for the New York Post?
I write for them once a week.
And you write for the Washington Examiner once or twice a week?
Every day.
So every day. Look, people, if you want everything Selena writes, you have to go to selenazito.com. Is there a newsletter to sign up for, Selena?
Yes, definitely. You can sign up, get my emails. They're free, they're fun, and they're not that big.
SelenaZito.com. Even you can spell it plain. I'll be right back, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.